it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Chris Mason, Predators TV analyst, will join us in the next segment. Predators win last night in Boston. The NHL trade deadline is Friday. So we'll get into all of that with Chris Mason shortly. Before we get to our next topic, some other breaking news in the NFL. The Las Vegas Raiders are signing Max Crosby to a three-year, $106.5 million extension that includes $91.5 million guaranteed, making him the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history, that according to Adam Schefter.
Well, good for him. I mean, you know, he's one of the premier pass rushers in the National Football League. I think, what, he's had double digits or close to 20 sacks over – the kid out of Cincinnati. But Max Crosby has – that's Hendrickson. But Max Crosby has been – or it could have been Max Crosby. I get the two mixed up. But Max Crosby has been one of the most dominant rush ends in the National Football League. So good for him. They had to sign him back because they don't have, you know, many star power defensive guys on their team, and Max Crosby is one of them. They have a young secondary that's pretty good, but – I think they're helped because of Max Crosby's ability to get to the quarterback.
So a lot of interesting stuff happened last night in the SEC. We'll start with a major upset. Texas A&M, which had been struggling lately, had plummeted down the top 25. They had lost four games in a row to Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Florida. They beat Auburn last night, handing number one Auburn its third loss of the season. So Texas A&M, after sliding basically almost out of the top 25, takes down Auburn on their senior night. Locally, Vanderbilt, their winning streak came to an end in a loss to Arkansas at Memorial Gym. Arkansas wins 90-77. So despite the good vibes from Vanderbilt, Willie, over the past few games, they're probably in a good spot for the NCAA tournament, but Arkansas needed that win to keep themselves in the running for a tournament spot, and they get it at Memorial Gym 90-77.
I think I set the table. Coach Willie,
you
got to give Coach Willie credit on that one. I set the table. The urgency wasn't going to be there for Vanderbilt naturally because I think there was – a sigh of relief, everybody around the country saying, wow, three straight wins against top 25, one on the road, you're in. And here's Arkansas having just been embarrassed at South Carolina, playing without one of their best players. Mm-hmm. It was the classic letdown for Vanderbilt. But let's give Arkansas credit. That's a talented team. And I think on top of that, it's a bad matchup for Vanderbilt. I was able to watch the first half before we took off from Boston to come back here. And I thought at halftime, I said, I don't like where this is going. And the reason was, and John Sundvold, who did the color commentary for SEC Network, I think really was hitting on it throughout the half. Vanderbilt was just having a lot of trouble getting quality looks like they normally do. They exploited Missouri and a lot of teams they play with great switching back cuts. They score more points in the paint than you would think for a team that's undersized, but not last night. Arkansas, who is a great shot-blocking team with length, they made it very tough. And Vanderbilt usually doesn't turn the ball over very much. Mm-hmm. They were turning turnovers into fast break opportunities. That was a dunk show last night by Arkansas. Did you see some of the dunks they had?
Yeah. Big Z had, like, it looked like he was just, you just put the ball anywhere and he could dunk it.
Yeah.
It's well, insane.
Yeah, he's like the kid on the Nerf goal, right? Mm-hmm. He's 7 foot two and he can shoot from the outside. But the guy that was unreal was Brazil.
Right, Brazil, he was really good.
Oh, my goodness. He had a couple of dunks where everybody in the gym had to just gasp and say, what just happened there? Like a windmill, like as if you were to take a running start.
A tomahawk dunk. It was just insane.
It was nasty. And so hats off to Arkansas. And I do think that that was a team that did a good job of exploiting Vanderbilt's weaknesses more. So, and I don't think you got Vanderbilt fully in the fight, which I think that's maybe the lesson they learned from last night is they're not going to out-talent anybody. They were predicted 16th in the league. They are not loaded with future NBA stars. They have to have everything at the table to win. And so when they don't have that edge, that eye of the tiger, they get beat. And they got another tough one at Georgia. I think they're going to be in regardless. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry. But I do think that they have to know that they can't bring less than their best effort to survive in this league.
Arkansas is such an interesting team to me because of the John Calipari of it all.
Right.
The win last night put Arkansas right at 49% on ESPN's bubble watch. They went from below 40% to back around 50-50. And considering the depth of the SEC and John Calipari's exit from Kentucky and what he was hoping to build at Arkansas, it's just a really intriguing story to me. Like, their final game of the regular season, they host Mississippi State on Saturday. They need to win that game and then probably win, how many do you think, in the SEC tournament? Two games at least,
well,
Arkansas?
Okay, the SEC tournament. The thing that works to their advantage in that is because a win, right? If you beat, like, for example, the Lady Vols right now are getting a win in the SEC tournament. But they're playing one of the lowest, maybe the lowest seed just because of the way the tournament is bracketed. That doesn't do anything to move the needle, right? When you beat a team that's a bottom feeder, that doesn't really do anything for the committee. But you have opportunities in this league to get another win that means something, a quad one win or something like that. To me, that's the one, that's what you're looking for. So when you say they need to win one or two, I think you're really saying, are you beating another possible tournament team? Are you putting another quality win in there where the committee's like, hey, they just beat so-and-so?
Well, the good part about it is,
and in the SEC, you got a lot of chances for those teams.
And that's the good part. Because
there's only a couple
teams.
Like, if I don't know how the draw is going to go, but if Arkansas beats South Carolina in the first round, that's really not going to, the committee's barely going to pay attention.
Which they wouldn't play LSU, but a team like LSU. The good part about it and the bad part is, the bad part is you're going against, it seemed like week, night in and night out, you're going against a top 25 opponent. That's the bad part about it. The good part is you're going against top 25 opponents, and that can help you out if you win those games.
So, by the way, based on the standings of the SEC right now, Arkansas would be the 11th seed in the SEC tournament facing Oklahoma in the opening round of the SEC tournament.
See, that bodes well probably for an Arkansas
And if
team.
They win, they would face Texas A&M. In the next round, Arkansas.
I would love to see that matchup because
Texas A&M and Arkansas.
Yeah, because Arkansas is a. I think Arkansas is going to. If everybody is coming back, a majority of these guys are coming back, and then obviously we know Coach Cal can recruit. This is going to be a much different team next year. I think this team is going to be competing for the SEC title next year. But this year they have the talent, but it doesn't. Just for whatever reason, it hadn't come together. It's starting to come together now.
Remember, they were 0-5.
Yeah, they were 0-5, and it was like, man, they were bad. But now they picked things up, and they put themselves in a position now where they're fighting for that last four in into the tournament. So when you look at
and Mississippi State has sagged some very quietly. You know, they're at 8-9. But and they've been viewed as in for a long time.
But
so
then again,
that's a winnable game for Arkansas, I think.
Yeah, still a winnable. And it would help. I think it would help Arkansas more than it would hurt Mississippi State. But if you look, I watched this game yesterday, Arkansas and Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt looked as if two things were happening. And we talked about this, Willie, off air. they're in. Whew, a sigh of relief. Like, but they also look like a tired team, too. And it looked like that before. But if you just look at the box scores, they shot really well from the three-point line.
Yeah, Vanderbilt shot 10 threes and still was nowhere near winning the game.
40% from the three-point line. They shot, 38% from the field. That's what got them.
Because they got out. They struggled.
They got out-rebounded. What was it? 40, it was at least defense. They're getting offensive rebounds.
42,
they
got 31. 12,
they got 12 offensive rebounds. And then in total, it was 42 rebounds compared to 31 rebounds. And majority of those were on the offensive end, like getting your offensive rebound. Vandy, and this is what's going to happen to Vandy, I believe, a lot. Because they're undersized, when they play a team that is long and athletic, i.e. Auburn, teams like that, they're going to have difficulties with getting rebounds and not allowing the other team to get offensive rebounds. Arkansas, because of their athleticism, they were able to get offensive rebounds. And that's what ultimately beat Vanderbilt. Because if you look at all the metrics, the numbers, you would think, okay, Vandy, this was a closer game to what the score actually says.
Yeah, and I think Arkansas can be a little up and down offensively, but last night they really attacked the basket. I was impressed with how they went about it. They were hungry. They were desperate. Vanderbilt, not as much. And I just think sometimes in an 18-game slugfest in this league, let's take Auburn and let's take Texas A&M. Texas A&M went through their rough period, right? As Adam mentioned, they lost four in a row. None of them to bad teams; they were to all good teams. But now they're a little bit more desperate to rebound. They catch Auburn. Maybe Auburn isn't quite as hungry. Everybody around the country say, "Well, they got the championship.
Yes.
They're the number one overall seed, no matter what." Okay, that's a perfect time to get beat. So everybody's human, and this league is so tough. I think the question is everybody, are they going to let everybody in besides LSU and South Carolina? Or will there be one team that gets squeezed? And you mentioned an intriguing one. If the draw stays that way, Oklahoma versus Arkansas in the first game, there was a time that I thought the committee would watch a game like that and say, okay, winner's in, loser's out. That's a bubble game right there. But I think now it's so computerized and they are so bent on saying it doesn't matter what your league record is. It doesn't matter how many teams we're letting in from the same league. It's all about the net and all of these things. And I kind of don't like that. I wish there was a little bit more of an eye test, human element. How's a team playing? They seem to throw all of that out. So I don't know if that would have everything. But is there a scenario where they get 14? Like, who would be the 14th team? That's what you don't want to be.
Man.
You don't want to be in that slot on the ladder.
The 14th team that will get into the big dance?
Right. Because really, when you look at it, there's only two teams in the SEC that are completely out of it unless they make a miracle run
LSU
in the tournament.
LSU is completely out of it.
LSU. And South Carolina.
South Carolina. Yeah, LSU and South Carolina.
Well, Texas had a big win last night.
Yeah, Texas.
Right.
Which makes me think it's
Texas stayed alive.
Which makes me think it's Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is 4-12 in the league. But if they – people still have them on the radar. And if they win two more – like, let's see. Oklahoma's got Missouri on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And that's at home. Oklahoma could win that game. And then they've got Texas on the road. So I would think Oklahoma and Texas are the two that are probably a huge game. Oklahoma, Texas, the last game.
Right now in Joe Lunardi bracketology, Oklahoma is the first team out.
So despite being 4-12 in the league, can you imagine being 4-12 in your league and you're still right there on the bubble?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Oklahoma.
But that shows you that shows you the depth. That shows you how good your conference is from top to bottom.
They had some great non-conference wins early in the year, which is the reason why they're still holding to that, because the committee doesn't weigh how you're playing at the end of the season any differently than they do how you played at the beginning of the season?
There are a total of, I'm looking at, okay, last four byes in Leonardo's in on the bubble. You got a SEC team in Georgia. We just talked about Georgia. Last four in is Arkansas. And then the first four out, you got Oklahoma and Texas. And then next four out, there's nobody from the SEC. But just in those two, you see how razor thin that line is for the SEC. So they could get 14 teams
in. I think that was
in
the significance of Vanderbilt beating Texas A&M on the road and then following that up with the Missouri win, because I think that put them above that group of teams. And even if they lose to Georgia, I still think they will be above the fray. In my estimation, I think tons. What you can't control what happens around the bubble. Things can change, but I think the overwhelming probability is that Vanderbilt is a lock, even if they were to lose the last two.
A huge game tonight in the SEC. Number 5 Florida at number 7 Alabama. Although Auburn slipped up last night, they don't have anything to worry about. They're going to be a number 1 seed. Whether they're the number 1 overall seed, we'll see. But they're comfortably on the one line. There's no drama there. Duke is probably on the one line, and it seems that Houston is making moves and could be on the one line, which leaves one number 1 spot for 3 SEC teams, Tennessee, Florida, and Alabama, two of which play each other tonight. Huge game in Tuscaloosa.
And then Alabama finishes with Auburn.
Yes.
At Auburn. So two really giant games for the Crimson Tide. And you win them both. Boy, that's going to get number 1 seed talk going, wouldn't it?
And then you just have to play the SEC tournament. Imagine if you're Alabama. You have to play Florida. You have to play Auburn. And then you have to go to the SEC tournament.
It just seems like in recent years, you guys tell me, I feel like the committee has most of the hay in the barn before the conference tournaments start. I don't think they swing seeds big one way or the other and say, okay, the first seed is on the line in the SEC tournament. But if there's a year that you would do that to split hairs, maybe it's this year. Where we know Auburn, regardless, is a one. But could they say, all right, let's see how it shakes out between Florida, Alabama, and Tennessee in Nashville. And if one of those three teams does way better than the others and has impressive wins or beats the other, that might be what decides who's the one seed.
Yeah, I think you
that makes
have
sense to me. That's a logic thing
it
to me.
It makes the most sense just because
but everybody wants to tell you about the computers and the quad ones and the quad twos. I don't like that. I like when you have a little bit more of that. You know, let's watch him play. Let's do the eye test. Let's reward what we're seeing. And not just, well, the KenPom is now 36.235. And their strength of schedule just went up from 32 to 29. So that puts them ahead. Like, they like to not emphasize head-to-head.
Are you doing
like
an
that.
Impression of me?
I'm doing an impression of people on the committee. I don't like that. Like, I like CM Newton people on the committee, coaches and, you know, athletic directors who maybe used to be coaches. Now it's just like, I think it's too easy to take your laptop out and look, hey, let's look at the net rankings, and they moved up. I just think they're leaning on that a little too much. Am I jaded from 2 years ago? Big time. That's when I learned my lesson, because I went on Robbie and Rex Road show. I gave a passionate case for Vanderbilt, and I did all the numbers. And I used all of the metrics because the one weakness that Vanderbilt had at that time was the net. It was way below everybody else in the bubble. But I was like, if you look past that, who they've beaten, who they've played, where they played, they beat out a bunch of other teams that made it over them. And Vanderbilt wasn't even in the first four out when the show came open. Because I said, look, they should be in. And Joe was like, hey, I'm telling you, I saw the committee, I heard what the committee had to say, and they're going hard on these net, and I didn't want to believe it. But that's when I became jaded.
I'm curious how Alabama responds coming off of the loss to Tennessee, where a lot went wrong for them at the end of that game. A lot of self-inflicted errors in that game, particularly the 5-second call on the out of bounds.
Right. So they probably, with 30 seconds left, had about a 9. If you go to by KenPom, they track, right? And it doesn't matter until it's 100, but their win probability was 90% at one point in the final minute of the game. So they had the game in their hands. Mm-hmm. It took a lot for Tennessee to steal it from them.
I think if Alabama loses this game, I think they're out of the running for a one seed. I think it's up to them to win this game to keep it. Otherwise, I think it's down to—
What if they won at Auburn, though?
No.
Ooh, well, yeah. Mm.
And then string together some wins in the SEC tournament. See,
I'm thinking it wouldn't
take,
it wouldn't take them completely out of it because if they come back and they say they win the SEC tournament, I think you got to put them in. I think if you had them as a sort of fringe number one and then they go and they win the SEC tournament, which is the best conference out there right now, wouldn't you have to almost put them number one if they were like – unless – the team they were competing with, which is usually another SEC team, unless he's outside, they're outside of the conference. If they're competing with that team and that team wins its conference title, then okay. But outside of that, I think even if Alabama loses, they still got a shot at getting the number one seed.
Now Tennessee's got an interesting one tonight too. This is again, you got to take on all comers. Mm-hmm. They play at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is really good, right? On especially down there, they're going to have it rocking. Tennessee is going to take Ole Miss's best punch tonight. Around the country, if they were to win that game, I don't think that's got everybody from an eyeball test mm-hmm. going, "Wow, Tennessee, that's a seed that's got to get them attention in the one seed."
Yeah.
But I don't know what the line is on the game tonight, but Ole Miss is going to come in there strong.
I think the only way
Tennessee minus Alabama, 2.5.
Okay, if Alabama loses,
Tennessee's favorite on the road, but Ole Miss,
it's a good chance.
They're gonna bring it.
If Alabama loses, Tennessee, if they beat Ole Miss or they lose at Ole Miss, I think if they beat Ole Miss and they finish out the season on a winning note, for them and Alabama, I think they would almost have to win the SEC championship. To me, they would have to win the SEC championship in order to get a number one seed. Because right now, Auburn, Houston, and Duke. And now who's that fourth seed? So anything short of UT or Alabama winning the SEC tournament, I think both of them are two seed.
615-737-1025. Tennessee favored by 2.5 points on the road at Ole Miss. Missouri a 5.5 point favorite on the road at Oklahoma. Alabama, a 3.5 point favorite at home against Florida. 615-737-1025. Chris Mason, Predators television analyst, will join us next as we turn our attention toward the NHL trade deadline on Friday. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The Nashville Predators win last night 6-3 against the Boston Bruins. They are back at home tomorrow against the Seattle Kraken. And joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Predators television analyst Chris Mason. Chris, let's start by going back to the weekend. The first domino fell for the Nashville Predators at the trade deadline. They traded Gus Nyquist to the Minnesota Wild for a second-round pick, which surprised me, to be honest with you. What did you make of that transaction? Were you surprised that Gus Nyquist, considering the season he's had, fetched the Predators a second-round pick?
No, because they retain half the salary. So I think anytime, that's I think sometimes when you see trades and you think of the player necessarily, it's not always the whole equation. I think you're seeing a lot of players that when you're able to help out and absorb some of the cap hit, it allows the team obviously to get that player. So I think the team, that's getting the player has to give up a higher draft pick. If it were a situation where, Minnesota, there was rumors out there, they're trying to find another partner so that to take some of that cap hit, if there were that, they would have to get some compensation out of it for taking that cap hit. So no, it didn't surprise me because that's a team that's familiar with Gus Nyquist. He went in, had a decent, Four Nations tournament. So I think with his track record, You know what you're getting out of Gus Nyquist, and this year was obviously a down year. But you know, there's scouts at every single game, and they know him well. So that didn't surprise me, especially because of the some of the salary retention.
So if you were advising the remaining players on the Nashville Predators roster, the trade deadline is Friday afternoon. Who would you go up to and say, "Hey, man, you might just want to have a getaway bag packed just in case"?
A getaway bag. That's nice. No, I mean, you look at guys that could help, you know, if you look at some teams, you just saw New Jersey, obviously Hughes getting hurt. They have to address, maybe something else as well. But, you know, that's a team that's got, they got a really good hockey team, but they don't really have any toughness. You know, their depth is a little, thin at the bottom. They've got a lot of high end, fast skilled players. But I think that's a team where if you look at the Winnipeg Jets, the further you go down their lineup, a guy like McCarron, I think, could bring really good value to a contending team, especially when you get into playoffs. A guy, you know, like Luke Shen, and I've heard some teams asking about him, you know, some scouts and things like that up in the media booths and things like that, about adding someone that's won and has that you know, toughness element to him, and that experience that could, you know, you see more value in a player like that in a big, heavy series. And I think for a lot of these teams, you know, you have to look at who your opponent's going to be. You know, for Vegas is a big team. They play a big, heavy team. And if you feel like you're going to have to go through Vegas, you have to be able to match that or be able to hang around to a certain degree. Colton Sissons is a guy. He got off to, you know, a really slow start this season, but, you know, the last, you know, 25, 26 games, he's been playing some excellent hockey. He's got his offensive production coming back up. You know, he's a player that you can trust in any situation, can play up and down your lineup, good penalty killer, good face-off guy. So those three in particular, I think, you know, Barry Trotz is probably getting some calls on.
See, Mace, since the last trade of Gus Nyquist, and obviously there are things swirling around this team as far as individuals they may move on from or try to get draft picks or whatnot. What have you and they had a big win last night. I mean, it doesn't do anything for their record and their schedule moving forward, but I think just to have a win like that, it ups the morale. Like I told Willie, that chicken breast tastes a lot better when you're riding back home after a victory. But what are you seeing from this team in the midst of all of this stuff that is happening?
Well, when the Nyquist trade went down, it was an afternoon game, and we're all, you know, sitting and waiting to do media and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're moving Nyquist gear out of the room and for the potential, you know, trade that eventually happened once they got all the details figured out. And you could really feel it. And I think that was probably one of the worst periods of hockey of the season, I think, because – you know, although everybody knows the situation, I think until something happens like that, it's maybe not almost real. And I think the reality of the situation set in, you know, they don't really have playoffs to play for anymore. All the stuff that they've been hearing, you know, concerning guys like Nyquist could possibly get moved. And then once you finally get the news that, hey, you know, he's not playing tonight, it's a gut punch. And I think you could really sense that in those two back-to-back games. They eventually, you know, tried to, as the game went on, they got into it a little more emotionally invested. And then, you know, once you kind of accept that and you say, hey, you know what, we're going to have to find our own, you know, reason to play here. And we can't, you know, we can't go out and play 20, you know, some odd more games the way that we played the Islanders and Rangers. And then I was, you know, I thought the Boston game, you know, they had a good combination of lines that seemed to work, but more so is their mentality. And so like, all right, we can't go out and, you know, it was embarrassing the way that they started those two hockey games, taking penalties, leaving their goalies hung out to dry. And then they went into Boston, you know, similar situation with the Bruins. They're still fighting for, you know, the playoff spot. They were 2 points out, and they came out and they were by far the better team, the Predators, against a desperate team. And you could just tell they kind of had that life back in their game. But it's so tough because you don't have that built-in motivation of playoffs. You have to manufacture that. You have to tell yourself every day, you know, you got to go and compete, and you have to, it's a lot of work just to get yourself to that level to be able to compete at the highest level with, you know, these desperate teams that have something to play for. But I thought that was a good way to end the road trip for sure.
Chris Mason is with us, and Mace, we're looking, all of us, for little signs of progress to hit Andrew Burnett's and Barry Trotz's goal, which is to feel better about the direction of things by the end of the season. We saw a couple last night for one game, and I think we're all curious where it goes. Luke Evangelista really paired up well with Ryan O'Reilly and Steven Stamkos. And Evangelista in particular is a guy that, to me, embodies a lot of Barry Trotz's vision of having his young nucleus of players graduate up to take bigger roles on the team. It hasn't happened to this point in the season for Luke, but that was one of his best games of the year. And he's still playing through a pretty significant injury that that knocked him back for a while leading up to the break. But I liked what I saw from him last night.
Yeah, you know, when I look at Evangelista, I remember, you know, him talking about, you know, the impact that O'Reilly had on him when he first got to the club, and he'd go out early and working on some of the net front stuff and getting to the interior. So for a player that, you know, was a really highly skilled junior player, and it's maybe not ingrained in your DNA to have that, you know, that sandpaper, that grit to your game, I think he's really trying to, you know, it's been a process of getting that kind of element full-time into his game to make it part of how he plays every game. And I think as a younger player, you'll see stretches of that, and then it goes away, and then you have to work hard to try to get that back in there. And I think when he's at his best, he's going to the net. He's being a little agitator. He's not a huge guy, but he'll get in there. He'll get on the body. He'll be all around the net. And I think when he's not feeling that way, and sometimes who you're playing with has, you know, a lot to do with, you know, how you play. When you're playing with Ryan O'Reilly, you gotta hop on board. You have to, you know, play that way. And I think you saw that out of him in that game last night. He was willing to go to the net. He was getting on the forecheck. He made a lot of, you know, great plays, keeping pucks alive when they were able to keep the puck in the offensive zone, just from that kind of hustle and grind game. And then which also, you know, allowed him to use his skill because they had the puck more. You know, Stamkos did a good job on O'Reilly's goal. You know, you wouldn't necessarily say he's a grinder type of player, but he handed it off to Evangelista. Then he drove the net hard, you know, taking two defensemen with him, which opened up space for Evangelista, who made a great pass over to O'Reilly, and they finished it off. And I just thought it was, you know, you feel good when you play like that, whether you win or lose. But obviously that line had a huge impact, and it seemed, you know, we'll see, like you said, it's only one game, but we'll see. It seemed like the line combinations worked pretty effectively last night. And that's something that's been a major challenge this year for Burnett, is to try to find something up and down the lineup, you know, that you feel good about putting out there every shift. So, you know, one game, but it was a good game, and hopefully they can build on that.
Another guy that I think is in the spotlight this week because of the trade deadline is Tommy Novak, because you heard Elliott pretty heavily throw his name around on his podcast when he was discussing Nashville. You go back a year ago, there was a lot of talk about Tommy Novak. Should they sign him? Should they trade him? They kept him. We know what's happened this year. Last night was an interesting Tommy Novak game. He scores a big goal early in the game, but then later in the game, he's moved down in the lineup because they wanted a little more of a defensive unit with him to protect the lead. So it shows you the pluses and minuses that he has in his game. And when you weigh how does he fit in the future versus what's he worth on the trade market, I think he becomes a really intriguing guy to think about when you wonder what's in Barry Trotz's head right now.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, you know, things in his game, especially, you know, the second half of the season. He's played a lot better. He like everyone else, got off to a slow start. But you see the offensive skill set that he has. He can be very effective when he's skating and confident. You know, one of the things I think you saw kind of against Vancouver last year, that when the game got heavy, it was a little bit tough for him. He's still relatively new to the league and learning, you know, exactly, you know, how he has to play in all these situations. He's played really well at the wing, you know, when he's been there recently. Last night he was at center. And, you know, yeah, situationally you have to do that, because especially when you're on the road, because you don't control the matchups. And when you have three offensive or three younger players playing together, you know, you can get into some trouble in some of those matchups if they're trying to get Panarin in that line. Or sorry, what's his name?
Pastrnak's line.
Pastrnak.
That they matched up and they got the tying goal in the third period against Novak's line.
Yeah. So then you're you want somebody that you trust in a defensive role. McCarron's really, you know, strong in the faceoff circle, and he's comfortable in those situations. But he's definitely a guy. I mean, if you need, he should be a top six guy. I think he's starting to play like that a little bit more here recently. But I mean, there's a lot of appeal to his game when he's skating. He's a really headsy player. He's a really good playmaker. You know, he's definitely a player that could help out a team. He doesn't have a huge cap hit, but it'll be interesting. I'm sure, you know, Barry's probably getting some calls on him, and it's going to be tough decisions, but that's what Barry's got. He's going to have the decision to make is, you know, a lot of these players you're talking about, if you talk about Michael McCarron, he's a player that, you know, you could still use next year, and you don't want to necessarily lose. You need that element. If you trade him away, you know, you're going to have to replace that somehow. And he's got a really good cap hit. He's a really good locker room guy. Just a hard worker. And Colton Sisson, same thing. He's been a lifetime Pred. You know, he's a guy that if you do end up trading him or deciding to do that, you're going to have to find someone to replace that role, which is not easy to do. So a lot of tough decisions here, and only 3 days to do it.
Chris Mason, Predators television analyst, joining us on D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick. Chris, we'll see you tomorrow, Predators and Kraken, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
And Elliot Friedman heavily rumoring what you pointed out to me. I think it was maybe off the air, but
yes,
it looks like the Kraken might have a shakeup trade in the works here involving Oliver Bjorkstrand and Yanni Gourde. And Gourde would be interesting going back to Tampa, where he's been a really successful player for them.
Yes, we will keep an eye on that. Chris, great stuff. We'll see you tomorrow. Predators and Kraken tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Of course, all coverage here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan. Stoneman & Company coming up next. Jared Stoneman actually gracing us with his presence in studio.
He came in hot, too. He came in hot with questions.
Yeah. I'm like Sam Darnold. I'm seeing ghosts. Jared Stoneman in studio. Can't wait.
Right. Did you notice he did not come in hot with the Sam Darnold discussion?
No, he didn't. He's going to keep that close to his hip.
There seems to be some lack of momentum in that direction, at least for now.
We'll see what Jared has to say about the Sam Darnold news from Paul Gaharsky. Coming up at 2 o'clock, in case you missed that, Paul Gaharsky reported earlier today that, I'm trying to find the exact, this was his tweet 6 hours ago, quote, "The Titans aren't going to be into Sam Darnold. If he was a shorter-term, cheaper option, sure. But as long as he's going to be a long-term, high-dollar commitment for somebody, it's not going to be them."
And I think that even shortchanges what it looks like right now, which would be, he's so by far the most decorated quarterback who will be on the market, that is going to only inflate his value even more. So we're talking about a guy you're going to have to way overpay based on what his credentials are to get. It'd be very, very different if there were four or five other guys and you would be picking him out and trying to weigh getting him at the right price, but you're not getting him at the right price. You are being gouged if you want Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I mean, the market will dictate what Sam Darnold makes. I do truly believe he's more concerned about his guarantee money rather than, you know, the AAV is for the agent. That's who that's for. I want to know how much guarantee money I'm getting, because it's going to coincide with the years. But what's in his favor, too, is that, okay, this, even though you will be paying me, say, $85 million guaranteed, because that's what TD presented to Graziano. So if you offer me $85 million in guaranteed money, even though I sort of proved it last year that I can do this, well, now you have a 3-year period to earn more money down the line, because you will be 30 years old the minute you are out of your next contract. 30 years old. So to me, if I'm him, I'm more worried about the guarantee than I am the AAV, because my thing is I will get another contract. I will prove to them that I am, because the next contract, if I prove to them 3 years in a row, I'm a $55 million guy now, closer to a $60 million guy. So you can play it from that standpoint. That's why I said the market will dictate it. And if the market says you're not a $40 million $40 million guy or you're not close to it, then that's when the Titans come back in play, I believe.
I still come back to this. You can fill in the blank, whatever quarterback you want. And the Titans, I don't think, will be in position to have a big year, to compete, have a chance to win playoff games, a legit chance to win a play, to make a playoff run. I just think, don't think they will be there. And therefore, to overpay for the best available quarterback does not make sense to me. I am in more the exploratory phase. Experiment if you'd like. Try the next reclamation project. Get the next Sam Darnold for a cheaper price. Or if you feel like the best quarterback out there is worth the number one pick, that's fine too. I tend to be leaning in a different direction. But no matter who it is, you can fill in the blank with whoever. You're not going to be in position to win next year. So proceed accordingly. Proceed accordingly. Build the best way possible.
A lot of breaking news in the NFL today. We mentioned Tyler Lockett being released, Christian Kirk being released, Max Crosby becoming the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. DK Metcalf has requested a trade. That was another piece of news. Zach Bond has signed a 3-year, $51 million contract with the Eagles, including $34 million guaranteed at signing, an additional $1.5 million in incentives and escalators.
Now, he's a guy that was a bargain basement pickup that's now earned a big deal, right?
Signed a $3.5 million contract.
So he just earned a big pay raise. But now they will be expecting more from him.
Yes.
Of course, yeah. Now they
and
will
so
be.
Now we'll see if he can sustain that level. But to his credit, he gets paid. He's earned the money.
But
that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. It's absolutely.
You have to hope. Mm-hmm. If you're the Titans, for example, that you can find your Zach Bond.
Sure.
You sign him for $1 million. You sign him for 1 year, $3.5 million. Turns into an all-pro.
There you go.
They need good stories. They need hits.
That's what I said.
They need hits. They need doubles. They need triples.
They need
occasional home run.
They need impact players, and they need guys that can play and contribute and be an impact immediately, like yesterday.
We will discuss this further tomorrow live from Bridgestone Arena. The Nashville Predators are back in town hosting the Seattle Kraken tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Stone & Company coming up next.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Wednesday. Peace.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.